हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मावीर्यविषावहै श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 33. Dvaita of Madhvacharya. Sambandha. The cardinal doctrines of Sri Madhvacharya's Dvaita Vedanta have been summed up as nine in a verse attributed to Vyasa Tirtha, 1478-1539. Hari Paratara, in all respects, Lord Vishnu alone is supreme and the highest. Satyam Jagat, the entire universe is truly and ultimately real. Tatvato Veda, the fivefold difference is fundamental. Footnote, these five differences are between God and sentient soul, God and insentient matter, one soul and another, soul and matter, between one material object and another. Okay. Jiva Gana Harer Anau Chara, the manifold embodied souls are all dependent on Lord Vishnu. Five, Jiva Gana, Nicha Ucha Bhavam Gata, the embodied souls are inherently graded as higher and lower, mainly threefold. It means according to the three modes. Muktir, Naija, Shukanu, Bhuti, liberation is enjoying the bliss befitting to one's original form. Amava, Bhaktischa, Tad Sadhanam, the means to secure liberation is pure devotion to Lord Vishnu. Akshadi, Tritayam Pramanam, the means of valid knowledge are only three, namely perception, inference, and verbal testimony. And nine, Akilam Nayaika Vedyo Harihi, Lord Vishnu alone is made known by the entire mass of scriptures. Okay.
We spoke yesterday about that Madhvacharya. He was mainly focused on worshiping Krishna.
Yes. Krishna meaning that they're worshipping Vishnu, but the form of Krishna is Vishnu.
So
then
speaks here about Vishnu.
No, that's just to establish the generic, the Vishnu as opposed to Brahman, like that, you know, that's the... Because for in their mind is Vishnu, but then Krishna is the form that they specifically like to worship of Vishnu.
And Ramanuja, they worship...
Generally forearm forms, yeah. It's not that Madhvas don't have a problem with forearm forms. It's just that somehow the Krishna mutt is Krishna with two arms. Okay. So this verse is originally is given by Lord Chaitanya to Madhvacharya. And then this has been comes down to Vyasa Tirtha, who is then, where's the overlap? 12 to 13, 14. So. Yeah, more than 100 years after Madhvacharya went. So, Vyasa Tirtha is one of the major persons in the line, like that. So then, you know, he's putting in this way to make it, you know, nice and clear. But the thing that is very important to note is in the fifth one, the embodied souls are inherently graded as higher and lower, mainly threefold. So this is where there'll be where it'll be in its proper line or they've misunderstood. Because the proper is that the embodied soul are graded like that. Means they're graded according to their consciousness. So they're either in, means in mode of goodness, mode of passion, or mode of ignorance. right? Because that's how they're taking three. Because otherwise, we had before those different levels of consciousness that you can get more levels, you know. I mean, like that. So, you know, depending on how much you're covered, like the non-moving, then moving, right? Then the you know human, and then the one who's actually taken a devotional process, and then the liberated. So here is that the threefold. They're taking the three modes of nature. Mm. Now, according to Gita, we understand that Krishna says one who sees all souls as the same is seeing in the mode of goodness. One who sees that there's a difference in the nature of the soul itself, meaning there's different qualities of souls, that's in the mode of passion. So somehow or another they've dropped into this mode of passion for some of them. You know, this is 100 years later. So they take it that there's mode of ignorant souls, they'll never come to Krishna consciousness, and mode of goodness souls, you don't have to preach, they'll come automatically. So generally speaking, the Madhvas don't preach, even though Madhvacharya preached a lot, and he didn't worry about, you know, what kind of souls are there. The point is the conditioning is three. So the conditioning of those in ignorance, there's a good chance they may not be so interested. And the ones in passion, then, I mean, in goodness, very easily will come in contact. Passion takes a little bit more convincing. But it's not that the soul is in that mode. Right, so from what I understand, the Tattvavadis, who were there at the time when Lord Chaitanya came, they think there's three grades of actual souls, not the conditioning. Right, so saying the embodied souls means the conditioned souls, there are actually three kinds of souls. So this is where then the philosophy gets a little weird, yes.
And they're stuck in that mode.
They're stuck. They'll be there eternally. But then the whole point of the material world being there, then what's the whole big deal about the ones in goodness?
Yeah.
Right, and if it's so simple, it also So it's just somehow or another, they missed the point that the acharya was making, right, and overemphasize in a particular way, and then make the mistake to connect it, how it shouldn't be connected. Yes.
In their philosophy, can the mode of ignorant souls get liberated?
From what I understand, they don't worry about them. It's just kind of they're just lost, and that's how they'll be, you know. But it doesn't make sense. Mm. Because if there's the element of free will, you know, in other words, the element of free will and the other element of the Gita saying that seeing like that is in the mode of passion, somehow or another they don't catch. I'm sure they have clever comments because they're very good at logic. But, you know, so it's not really worthwhile talking to the Tattvavadis. You know, we just, you know, you just avoid it. Nice they're there, they worship Krishna, you know, you go in their procession. Take darshan, take some prasad, and go. You know, you don't have to get into a discussion like that.
So somebody's come up with a bag of Madhva's writings, and he's like, the other one says, "Where are you going?" He goes, "You know, going around the street. You're a waste of time. You know, waste of time. You're lost." You know.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Well, that was the whole problem when this one acharya who deals with us. Like that, when his junior wanted to learn English, so the devotees taught him English through Prabhupada's Gita, right? And so he was convinced about preaching. So then, when he had an opportunity, he actually went to America to preach, right? And then every 2 years, the mutt changes who's taking care of the main deity. So the 8 mutts, when I mentioned, mutt was brother and then 7 others, then they became the heads of the Asta mutt. So he had originally established every 2 months it changes, but they somehow or another in time changed it to every 2 years. Right? So then his idea is you're just doing the worship and that. They wanted to do some big things, so he needed 2 years, you know, he needed that time to collect money and stuff like that. So then it was the time for their mutt to do the puja. So then he came back from America, but when he came back, they said, because you've crossed the ocean, you have to do prayaschitta before you can worship the deity. He said, "What do you mean? I've been preaching Madhva's philosophy, so therefore we're pure," like that. And they said, "Nope, you don't go through the prayaschitta." He says, "You're not going, you know, you're not going in the mud." He said, "Fine." He went back to America. Like that. So he's still there preaching. Like that.
Mark?
Yes.
Is that correct that when this... the system was introduced by Madhvacharya. He wanted, you know, for 2 months to worship the deities, but others should preach, but somehow...
Yeah, of course. Like that. But somehow or another...
they're not interested in preaching.
So no, it's just somehow or another they've missed some of these subtleties. That's why we have to be very, very careful to keep everything in line. That's why we see when the discussion it gets too focused on you know, it's only the name and nothing else matters, or, you know, everything else, you know, if you do anything wrong, then you go to hell, or, you know, all these overly emphasized things. You have to be very, very careful. Otherwise, because they make sense to the mind, the mundane mind, but they're not actually logical. Because of some kind of particular conditioning, then it sounds good. So you have to be very, very careful that those things don't become prominent. Otherwise, you end up with something very unique. Like that. Yes?
Tathagata, these are officially following Madhvacharya?
Yeah, yeah. No, they are.
It is the main...
But I know if it's the main group, but I can't really say how exactly... on when this whole thing came up of the Tathagatavadi kind of thing, you know, I'm not sure how it, you know, like that, because it doesn't appear that this is explaining any of that kind of thing, like that. Madhva's ontological theory. Madhva's ontology is characterized by two principal ideas of being. Of being, reality and independence. Reality is related to this material world and souls, while independence is characteristic of. Reality is related to this material world and souls, while independence is characteristic of the Lord alone. Okay, so he's taking that angle. It's not that the Lord, the living entities are. The Lord is independent, and everybody else is dependent. So you're taking the masculine and feminine principle. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? In other words, all these different aspects are all part of the Vaishnava theology. But it's just a matter of which areas are being emphasized. Right? Because he's trying to show that there's a difference between anything that'll show difference between the Lord and the living entities, that's where the focus is.
Right? It's not one.
Yeah, it's not one. You can't in any way say it's one, right? Because the Lord's independent, the jivas are not. Well, we'll take it that the jiva has, just like he's part and parcel of the Lord, so just like quality, he has the same qualities as the Lord, right? So he has minute independence, and the Lord has unlimited independence. But the problem with that point is the closeness of the oneness. Oneness in quality, but not in quantity, right? So he generally just doesn't use those aspects.
So then following their own process, although, you know, from Gaudiya Vaishnava point of view, it's not as complete. It's
yes.
Still they attain Vaikuntha.
Of course.
So it's not a problem.
No. It's not a problem to go to Vaikuntha like that. Our point is that it's not going to get you to Braj. So that's why we're not interested. But a Madhva following his line very nicely is we don't have any problem. Is that we don't go there to preach to Madhvas. Problem is that then their pundits sometimes like to come and argue with us. Yeah, yeah. No, it's sometimes like that. Sometimes they accept us as Madhvas, sometimes they don't. You know, that we're in the Parampara. Because we don't accept the Dwait philosophy, so they'll say we're not in the line. But then if you're really being technical, it's Brahma is the head of the line. You know, so, you know, does that make sense? You know, so therefore we're in the Brahma Sampradaya, that they have to accept, but whether they accept us as Madhva, in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So they'll say we're the Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya, but my Brahma Madhva Gaudiya, you know, like that. Some accept, some don't. Sometimes then they accept, sometimes later they don't. It all depends, you know, I am not really sure. It's been a while, so, like that. But at least the one mod is very favorable. Like that.
The main one?
No, it means because there's eight of them. So it means the main is whoever's sitting in the seat at the time. During the Pariyaya, what's his name? Paripo, not Parima, Polima. No. There's another one that starts with a P. I don't remember. You know Udupi?
Yeah.
Okay. When you come out of Krishna Mutt, right, you know, you have that temple in the middle.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you turn right, then on the right there on the corner is the one with Raghavananda, I think. Mm-hmm. Right, then there's one more mat, then the one in the corner there, that's the one that's favorable.
Okay, that's a short one.
Yeah, it means that they're down this way. Then there's another road here, because there's a road here, then there's 3 months, then there's a road that I remember, then there's a few months here. And then I think there's one more mud over here. Forget where it is. So that's six, seven. I'm not sure where the eighth one is. Maybe they're right next to each other. And I don't think there's any mutts on this side. So then that one is more favorable. The one exactly opposite in the middle, they have big pandits. Their pundits were favorable, but not necessarily the acharya. Like that. Yeah, and then in this corner over here, on the inside, that's where the good restaurant is.
That's the main thing. Yeah.
Do they serve halva?
I think they have their own kind of halva, but that's, I think, Mysore is the place for halva. Mysore. The Mysore halva. It's different from whatever you've ever had.
Partially have gurukuls.
Each mutt has their own schools. If you go into the mutt, then they have their scene going on. Whichever one's sitting in the Krishna mutt, then they, where the back is, it's always just going on because only a few stay. Not that many are there because you have the Swami, you have the junior, and then you have the other brahmacharis that are there. Right, the junior will stay. The junior, I think the junior is a sannyasi. The senior is a sannyasi, the junior is a sannyasi, the others are brahmacharis. And generally they'll always, after training, get married. Like that. But they have. Yeah.
Does the junior become the next senior?
Yes. Like that. And then he makes another junior. So like that they go.
So they're interrelated or not? They're separate?
They have separate identities, they're managed separately, but they're all, there must be some way they hold themselves together. But they manage each one separately. So you go into each one, how it's set up, what's how it's run, everything is all different.
Yeah.
But they don't have problem, right? You know, they have eight of them sitting next to each other. We have a problem with two of them in one city, or one country, even like that. What to do? I don't know.
Another one. Reality is related to this material world. What does it mean? That it's not illusion? They fight
my mind? No, it's because I think it's from up before here. The entire universe is truly and ultimately real. Because the Mayavadis are trying to say that the material world is illusion. Right? Vivartavad, it's just an illusion. It's not actually there. So he's saying, no, it's real. Because ultimately it's based on the Lord, it's His energies, and so it's real. Maybe our perception of it is not real, but ultimately the universe itself is real. It actually exists. Does that make sense? The Lord's independent, the jivas are dependent on the Lord, and the world exists. Because all of these things break down the Mayavad philosophy. Right? In other words, you're not just taking it and then bringing them into, you know, what's proper. You're just saying that, you know, what you're doing is wrong. This is the way you're supposed to look at it. You know, so it makes it very clear. It's a very direct method. So in other words, we know if the one doesn't work, you use the other. Right? I said, I think it was Theodore Roosevelt said, that's it. Speak softly, but carry a big stick. That was his method.
Roosevelt Niti.
Yeah, Roosevelt Niti. Yeah. Okay. Shankara says that the real must necessarily be eternal. Right? On the other hand, the Buddhists affirm that it has to be necessarily momentary, kshanika. Right, so the Shankara is saying it has to be eternal, so everything's changing here, so it can't be eternal, therefore it's not real. Mm-hmm. But that the material energy is eternal, that they're not catching, because that means then you have to accept that Brahman has energies, and then it's not one. Right? There's the Lord and His energy, so then there's two. So then for them that's a problem. Right? So they can't see that anything has... So they'll through this. Okay. The Madhva conception of reality is in between these two concepts. Existence, then, is a test of reality. For Madhva, Satya may be the existence at some place in time, and not necessarily for all time and throughout space. Actually, existence at some time and place is sufficient to distinguish the real from the unreal. The second test of reality is practical efficiency. Okay. Yeah.
Does it mean that sometimes it exists and it's just good enough to distinguish?
It's not giving. Maybe it will be explained a little after, because it doesn't give enough detail there to actually tell what he's talking about. Unlike the classical definition of dualism by Shankya philosophy, quote, a theory which admits two independent and mutually irreducible substances. The dualism of Madhva, while admitting two mutually irreducible principles as constituting reality as a whole, regards only one of them, namely God, as the one and only independent principle, Svatantra, and the other, namely all finite reality comprising Prakriti, Purushas, Kala, Karma, Svabhava, etc., as dependent, Parantara. This concept of two orders of reality, Tattva, namely Svatantra and Paratantra, is the keynote of Madhva's philosophy. Right? So they're saying, means if you're going to have dual, it has to be, they you know, these independent entities, but he's showing that no, that's two. That one's independent, the other's dependent. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is how he's. So in other, whatever they say, he's using same kind of concept, mm-hmm. but he's using different ones that bring into the dual aspect. Mm-hmm. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So they're saying that you have Brahman and you have the illusion, and they have nothing to do with each other. Right. It means they're completely independent of each other. So their existences are separate. So that way, then, that's their dualism. So he's catching that aspect of it and saying, no, but the one is independent, Brahman is independent, the other is dependent. Mm. So there must be a connection. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
So then you'd have to have, how do you say? Shakti Parinamavad, that the energy of the Lord is transforming. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Madhva's ontological scheme. One, this is seven. Okay. Tattva reality is of two categories. Svatantra or independent, Lord Vishnu alone, and Paratantra or dependent. Paratantra is of, okay, so that's tattva, or what's real. Paratantra is of two kinds, bhava or existence and abhava or non-existence. Bhava, three, bhava or existent entities are of two broad types. A, chaitana or conscious, achaitana or not conscious. Four, achaitana or unconscious entities are threefold. A, nitya eternal, the Vedas alone, achaitana. Nitya nitya or partially eternal and partially non-eternal, the Puranas, Prakriti, Kala. And anitya, or non-eternal entities, which is divided into samsara, or created, the world and everything else, and asamshrishta, or uncreated, mahatattva, ahankara, buddhi, manas, ten indriyas, the tanmatras and the panchabhutas. Okay.
It would be explained?
Will it be explained? I'm really not sure.
He is using created and uncreated there in the sense of amalgamated into forms.
Yeah. So here, created means samshrishta, or created, the world and everything else is what we see. Ashamshrishta, uncreated, means what's in the primary creation. So primary creation is not created. It's always there. In other words, it's intelligence, the indriyas, all that. These are just the things that they exist. Then they become placed into the various forms and all that. You know, just like the Vaisheshika, you have all the atoms. Then you take some earth atoms, some this, that, and then it's made into something. So it means what's made into something, that's created, but what was the original wasn't created. Right. Does that make sense? So in other words, the all those elements are there in the pradhan, the 24 elements, they're already there, so they're not created, they're eternally there. But then that's taken, and then all the embodied souls are given forms according to that. So that would be created and non-created. Does that make sense?
Partially eternal, partially non-eternal.
Puranas, because beings are partially eternal because the knowledge they're given is eternal. But the point is their manifestation is not. It's not like the Veda, which is already there, always there. The Purana then has to be spoken. But the Veda is unspoken, it's still there. Because even after the disillusion, it's still present. Right? So that makes sense.
Yeah. Veda in this sense will be...
Means that there is the eternal element, but its manifestation is not there. So the Puranas are sometimes manifest, sometimes not. Right? Prakriti is sometimes manifest, sometimes not, though she's eternal. Kala, then it will be, you know, here it'll be manifest or it'll be not. So that's partly... Right, and then Nitya is the Vedas alone. That's what they're taking. So that's unconscious. Then Chaitana, or conscious entities, can be Dukkha Sprishta, or those associated with sorrows, and Dukkha Sprishta, those who are not so, Lakshmi Devi. Okay?
Only Lakshmi Devi?
Well, he's pretty specific, just like Swatantra is only Lord Vishnu. So in other words, you bring yourself in line with Lakshmi, then you have no sorrows. But, you know, just make sure it's not two one. You know? As I says, to be two, you and Lakshmi.
So these two, are they the Tathashta and the eternal potency?
I would have a tendency to think that's what it is. So conscious is internal and jivas. Then Dukkha Sprishta are divided in Vimuktas, or released, Devas, Rishis, Pitris, Naras, and Dukkha Samsta, are those abiding with sorrows, which are of two types, Mukti Yogya, or salvable, and Mukti Ayogya, or unfit for Mukti. Right? So we'll take the unfit for Mukti means there's so much in the modes they're not interested, but by a good association, then they become interested. But then some of the followers take it, no, they will never be interested. They're eternally like that.
But that's corresponding to their idea of souls being three good.
Yes, yes. That's the problem. Muktya yogis can be A, Nitya Samsarin, or ever transmigrating, Tamogya, or damnable, Martya Dhammas, the worst men, Daityas, the demons, Rakshasas, and Paisachas. Oh, these are Mukti Ayogya, unfit. Mm-hmm. Nitya Samsarin, ever transmigrating, Tamayogya, or all these, how do you say, Daityas, demons, Rakshasas.
Who are those Nityas I'm saying?
It says ever transmigrating. So it must be, I get the idea, it must be those in the mode of passion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they're always transmigrating. And Tamayogya, or damnable. Each one of these Tamayogyas can be Praptan Dhammatas, or those who are already damned in hell, and Shishtamsta, or those who are in samsara but are doomed to hell.
Sounds familiar.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Yes.
It's classy, they always get a bit scary, isn't it, whenever there's like the emphasis on the wrong point.
Yeah, yeah. You put that. He's, in other words, there are those positions, but we'll understand is that, yes, the ones in passion and ignorance, then they come like this, and they may be in that position, but everybody, all living entities, are mukti yogya, or salvable. It's just at the present condition, they may be unfit for mukti. But give it time, just like the rock is not so fit for mukti. Right, but after some time, after it's done its time as a rock, then, you know, it starts moving up in the species, and then it becomes the human form, and then by good association it takes up, you know, unless of course the devotees sit down and have prasad there and spill some dal or something on the rock, you know. So I'm sure that gets some bhakti sukriti.
But we shouldn't distribute to the rocks.
No, because you don't know whether they're actually living rocks or not. So,
but some you do.
Like, some are. I'm just saying.
With like diamonds and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. So in other words, okay, don't spill any doll on diamonds. Like that.
It's not a big risk for me. It's not like often in the vicinity of diamonds.
Oh, okay. Don't spill any halva on the diamonds.
That will definitely not happen.
Okay. You wouldn't want to waste it. Okay.
If you have a ring this diamond, then you eat it.
Oh, yeah. No, he doesn't have.
So we're good.
Very good. Okay. Okay. The theory of visheshas. Okay. A special feature of Madhva's philosophy is the category of visesha, which he introduces to explain the appearance of beta, where there is none. Right? So to give, show difference. Right. So the special features. So this will be you know, what will be the aspects, you know, that he'll be basing everything on. Like Ramanuja had so many things to establish the nature of everything. Then you can, taking that, then you can show, the, therefore, God, the living entities and everything. Is that some example? Okay. The category distinguishes a quality from a substance and apart from the whole. Between a substance and its quality, or between a whole and its parts, there is no difference. The difference appears on account of visesha. We do not perceive any difference between the cloth and its whiteness, but we perceive the visesha, the particularity of the cloth. In other words, you just see it as a white cloth, but you can see the uniqueness of it, you know, of that particular white cloth. In the case of God, the principle of visesha is employed to reconcile his unity with the plurality of his qualities and powers, and the plurality of his divine body, divine dress, divine boat, and the like. The concept of visesha is used to accommodate the two conflicting types of texts in the Upanishad, those which speak of Brahman as nirvisesh and savisesh texts, by which Madhva tries to reconcile the concept of monism with that of plurality. The concept of visesha seems to be akin to the concept of achinta beta beta. This view gains further support from the fact that Baladeva Vidyabhushan in his Govinda Bhashyam reverts to Madhva's doctrine of visesha in reconciling monism and pluralism, and characterizes it as being identical with the concept of achintya. He says that Brahman is spoken of as possessing the qualities of Sat, Chit, and Ananda, although these qualities constitute the essence of Brahman. This is due to the supralogical functions of visesha, because visesha does not imply that Brahman is, from another point of view, identical with its qualities, and from another point of view, different. Nevertheless, we cannot take the concept of Madhvacharya is totally identical to Sri Chaitanya's, because, according to O.B.L. Kapoor, Madhvacharya's concept of achintya is not so achintya or inconceivable as the achintya of Sri Chaitanya. Madhva's achintya is related to visesha, which reconciles the appearance of difference and the identity, while Lord Chaitanya's achintya reconciles real difference with real identity. Right, so he's saying that there appears to be difference, and we're saying that there is difference. Mm-hmm. Like that. Understand? Okay, so this visesha is just, it means, in other words, he's using it as special. This is interesting, because visesha means special, and vishishta dwait means special oneness. So it's a human. Okay. But in other words, he's very nicely explained it, a logical thing, so it'll be used, just like any of these systems. There's something special that is used from this system. Madhva's doctrine of difference. According to Madhvacharya, the uniqueness of a particular to be it a person or thing, is to be understood in terms of difference from all else. Difference is not merely a component part of reality, related from outside, but constitutes the very essence, dharmi, sarupa, of an object. There are three types of differences. Sajatiya, or difference of things of same category. Vijatiya, or difference of things of different categories. Svagata, or internal distinctions within an organic whole. This type is not admitted by Mandva in its absolute sense. Okay, so you have things of the same category, and within that category there's a difference. You know, like we have columns here, the same category, but they're different. Mm-hmm. Right? And the other is that there's a difference between, the, you know, there's columns here and there's blankets. Right? So they're completely different groups, so there's difference. Mm-hmm. Right? And so internal differences. Within an organic whole, there's some differences between the different aspects of it. Like you have the body, then there's the mind element, the subtle body, the gross body, all these different kinds of things. So he's not getting too much into that one. Mm-hmm. Right? Because in the absolute sense, then it's one entity. Sri Madhu insists on five absolute and eternal distinctions between Brahman, Ishwara, Jiva, and Jara, or the inanimate world. He quotes from Paramashruti. The universe consists of fivefold differences. That was what we had on the page before. Okay, the difference between God and sentient soul, God and insentient matter, one soul and another, soul and matter, and between material object and another. Right? So if you have three things, these are the only things you can compare. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about knowledge of the Lord, of the material nature, and of the jiva, then that means knowing the three, but also knowing what's the connection between each of them and what's the difference. Does that make sense? So that would be included, yes.
What's the meaning of sentient?
Sentient. Conscious. Yeah, means God and sentient soul, means the soul's conscious. But God and insentient matter means matter is not conscious.
Maharaj, the sixth one could be differences between one form of God and another.
Yeah, but he's not so much getting into that. Like you said before, the distinctions within the organic whole is not so much getting into. Because here, he doesn't get so much into Rasa and these other things because he's simply trying to defeat the Mayavadis. You know, like that. Like you see in those points by... it's alluded here. The means of to secure liberation is pure devotion to Vishnu. Right? Like that. That infers that. You know, from that you could expand everything. But he's just showing that is, if you want to be liberated, you're going to be liberated by being in a relationship with the Lord. So that means there's you and the Lord. So that position's eternal.
Mm-hmm. His main point is to preach against Mayavad philosophy.
Basically, we see.
What about his followers? He wants them to do the same? Because if he doesn't get into the rasa so much, means, you know, what's their philosophy then? Only fighting with Mayavad?
No, I mean, they have their practices, you know, the prayers and everything like that. Like you see, is when they dress the deity, they dress them in all unique in ways, like that. Yeah, it means in the Krishna mantra, then, depending upon who is doing it, I don't know, but they had some certain amount of outfits. But then one of the acharyas, he introduced a different outfit every day. But the different outfit, they a completely different way of dressing it. You know, so. One day I came and I looked through the little means. There's because the deity turned around. They wouldn't let this one devotee who was not a Brahmin into the temple, so he sat directly behind the temple. Just sat down and was singing about the Lord. So the deity turned around and the wall cracked so that he could get direct darshan. Mm-hmm. So that the main door is closed. They don't use it like that. So the other side, where the crack is, they put in a little like window, but it's got nine little windows in the window. You know, it's a jolly with nine holes, so each is for the nine, you know, processes of bhakti. Right? And so then I went up to the window and looked in, and I saw a girl sitting on a swing. So different. You know, sometimes he's there with a big cow, silver cow, like that, you know, he's playing his flute. Other times he's there as Narayan with four arms. Yeah, like Vaishnavas. But every day was a different one. Like that. So
this is Bodhisattva.
It is. It's a Pancharatra tradition. So some are trying to say this is Manaspa. No, as long as it's connected with the pastime, it's Vaishnavism. It's not. It's standard. They've been doing this for, you know, a long time. Yeah, the Madhvas do it, the Ramanujas do it. Anybody who follows Pancharatra does it. You know, just, we have enough time, just trouble just getting the deity dressed, you know, let alone Vaishnavas, you know. So Vaishnavas is pretty standard.
But they have only one deity?
Yes.
Here they have covenant. Eight, five, one.
Yeah. No, they're the just one. Indeed. This difference is real and beginningless. If it had the origin, it would have perished. But it does not perish. Nor is it imagined through illusion. Right? Because that's what the Mayavadi is saying. You're imagining the difference. Or there's a beginning when the creation started. We're saying, no, those differences were already there before the creation. If it had been imagined, it would have terminated. But it does not terminate. Therefore, the contention that there is no duality or difference is the opinion of the ignorant. The enlightened hold that it is known and protected by Vishnu, and that as such it is asserted to be real, that Vishnu alone is supreme. Right. So even you say that those who are enlightened, they may know that, but still Vishnu is supreme. Right? So he's putting that great emphasis on there to show Vishnu's unique position beyond everything. Right? So Ramanujas, because it's more kind of the togetherness of it, then, you know, the Vaishnava association and everything, that becomes very prominent in the practices. Well, here it's there, of course, but it's not the emphasis where... That means they practice it, they follow all the etiquette. But it's just the focus is more on this aspect of difference. Yes?
All right, and Madhvacharya, what is the main scripture he's using? In this, like, what is it basing on?
I think Vedanta. I think Vedanta Sutra.
Okay.
You know, Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, I think it's there. But for Ramanuja, it was the Vishnu Purana.
Yeah.
Like that. But, and they also, they accept Bhagavat. They just don't accept the chapter on Brahma Vimohan, Lila.
Ramanujas, they also accept Bhagavatam?
Yeah, yeah. It's just not their main Purana. Like that, because it's more about Vaikuntha. Like that.
They don't give any commentary on the Bible.
Not that I know. Jayatirtha, okay, concept of God. Jayatirtha in his Nyaya Shuddha gives classical expression to the metaphysical ideology of the Upanishads as conceived by Madhvacharya. All texts of the Vedas declare, indeed, the majesty of the Supreme Brahman as a storehouse of numberless auspicious attributes and free from all imperfections. Of these, one, some represent it as endowed with such attributes as omniscience, lordship of all, control of beings from within, beauty, magnanimity, and other excellences. Two, some describe it negatively as free from sin, devoid of grief, having no material body, and so on. Three, yet others speak of it as being beyond the reach of mind and words, in order to teach us the extreme difficulty of its understanding it. Four, many others depict it as the one without a second, so as to make it clear that man must seek it to the exclusion of all else. Five, still others proclaim it as the self of all, so that it may be realized as conferring on all else their existence, no ability and activity. Thus do scriptures depict the Brahman in diverse ways, and from different standpoints, all converging towards the one purpose of expounding the transcendental and immanent majesty of God in himself, in the Atma, and in the world. So he's taking here, is that interesting, is he's taken all the different ones. In other words, Ramanuja is basically dealing with the two, that without qualities or with qualities, right? And showing how one is the positive, one's the negative. But here he's taken and he shows that they have qualities, he shows that it's free from sin, because beyond the supreme pure, beyond my reach of mind in that, so the Maya body just so you can't be known. But the point is that it can only be, he's showing out how it's extremely difficult, right? So by the grace of the Lord, then you can know. But the point is bringing out that it's difficult, so therefore you have to pay attention, right? One without a second means it has to be the Lord and nothing else, right? Not the Lord and karma, your Lord and this, Lord and... No, it's supposed to be just the Lord. Right. And then here, this fifth one then brings out the others, is that as the self of all, so it may be realized in conferring on all else their existence, knowability, and activity. So in other words, everything is everybody's existence, everybody's ability to know, and everybody's ability to act is coming from the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So when you get to these aspects like this, then you see that it's standard. Standard aspects. Just he's put it together in a very, you know, nice way, like that. Make it very, how do you say? You know, just clear. That here's what the Vedanta says. So when we say Vedanta, that would also include Upanishads. Right? Proofs about God. The existence of God cannot be proved by any inference, for inference of equal force can be adduced against the existence of God. If it is urged that the world, being an effect, must have a creator or maker, just as a jug has a potter for its maker, then it may also be urged, on the contrary, that the world is without any maker, like the self. If it is urged that the self is not an effect, and that therefore the counter argument does not stand, then it may also be urged that all makers have bodies, and since God has no body, God cannot be the creator. You know, so his point is that by inference, by using logic, because that's the point, is the Nyayas feel we can prove. Like if you look on the general logic, then you would say yes, because you present it that if there's the created, there must be creator. So along these lines, it's general. But if you want to get really, really technical, then the problem comes is then the qualities of each of these positions, you can take it and reverse it. Right? Does that make sense? So then the difficulty comes is that he's making the point is that you can't depend upon inference to establish God. Right?
What does it depend on? Scriptures?
Basically. Thus the existence of God can only be proved on testimony of the scriptures, right? Because you have pratyaksha, you have anuman, and you have shabda. So pratyaksha is definitely, it's there because it says it's beyond the reach of mind and words, so you're not going to be able to see here. But through inference, then you could tell. Right? But at the same time, even that, because through the inference, how expert you are at using the inference, then you can take something that you've proved and put together. Lord Chaitanya, remember, he would do that. He'd come in and, okay, what's your philosophy? Defeat that. And then having defeat that, then he would defeat how he defeated them and show the other one. So it's just, you know, it's good, just good, clean fun. Right?
So there is only shabda?
Yes. See, that's what we see is the other ones weren't, I mean, not Ramanuja, but I'm saying the other schools, shabda is there and is important, but it's not given that absolute position that it's only through shabda that you can understand. Because the others give quite a bit of importance to these other aspects. But what they're bringing out is that, let's say, if we say pratyaksha is important, if we're looking at it from the Vaishnava standpoint, we mean that you're going to take shabda, contemplate it, apply it in your life until you can actually see it in your life. Right? That's what we mean. But it was based on shabda. But he's basically saying here is that, no, you can only prove by this. Like that. But he's not discussing specifically the application. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, there's so many different ways that they feel you can through logic establish. But the problem is, a better logician can overturn it, right? Because you just take the definition finer, and then you know, it's just like we see when we're asking questions. Then a question can come up, so you find an exception. And then once you've dealt with the exception, they find an exception to that exception. And it just, you know, you can just keep on going forever like that. So that's why then Shabda says this is what it is. That's how you have to take it. So then the advantage here means, and then for the Mayavadis, because the problem is that the Lord can't be known, right? Nothing that you can say, nothing that's there, everything is illusory. But then you're saying, no, it's what the Shastra says, it has to be that, it has to be correct. So therefore you have all these different varieties. Why you're only taking the one? So how to put all those together? So there's five kinds of descriptions, general descriptions of the Lord, right? So the Mayavadis would be very careful to take those ones that they can twist into oneness, right? But he's showing, no, all of these is there. So therefore, since Shabda said all of this, it can't means if there's all these contradictory, Veda can't be contradictory, since it's authority. Therefore, they're both right. Right? He has qualities, he's spiritual, and he has no qualities, no material qualities. You know, that kind of. Like that.
He says that what's important, Shabda and
Pratyaksha also? Because he's bringing out the aspect of seeing it practically in your own life, in your own devotional service.
So he's more on the application level.
Yeah, it means you see much more the emphasis on the practices, you know, that kind of as a group, those group practices. Like you see they have all the big festivals and like that. The Madhvas have a nice little festival, but you don't think of Madhvas in big festivals like that. I mean, if they do the Paryaya, they do a big festival, but that's the change. But the Shris is like any time there's an excuse, they're out there. And I mean, they have, you know, things they put the deities on that'll be like half the size of this building, you know, the footprint, and there's 100 pujaris carrying it. You know, and it's all trained. There's different steps, so it's not just they're just walking. You know, and then the hard part is get everyone to walk together. No, they have ways of stepping like the horse, stepping like the elephant, stepping like the swan, stepping like this. So, depending on what it is and the music, I'm not sure how it's worked out. I think it's worked out by Ramanuja himself. Is that the different times, and they'll switch into that other. Mm-hmm. You know, because the one will just go forward, the other one will rock, you know, do like that. That's how the elephant goes. You know, and the other, so they have all these different. That makes sense? Because Ramanuja got into all the details of the worship like that. It means it's in the kitchen. The recipes are engraved on the stone walls. Right, because somebody might change the recipe. So no, it's carved into the stone. That when you're making, you know, pongal, there's this much rice, this much dal, and this much ghee, and this much, you know, peppercorns and salt. So no one can say, well, no, it's carved in the wall. So when you say written in stone, you know, that's what he did. Yeah, it's right there on the wall.
So that's what we took from Ramanuja.
And that kind of like the festival kind of aspect. Festivals and Vaishnav association. I don't remember what was taken from Madhva. Like that would be something to have man get out. I don't think it's in the back. Appendix, God, Karma, Bhakti. That's the souls. Shimature cause. Comparative analysis. No. Well, 15 points that are found in the Gaudiya line, not found in the other schools. Like that.
Churchill borrowed his
Sorry?
Churchill borrowed his mother's symbol.
Yeah. But he keeps his fingers a little closer together. Yeah. It's not so extended.
Victory, you know.
Yeah, two. But even today, if you go to Hungary, if they ask a question, they always do this. It's the way you're supposed to. You know you're hungry when the hands go up and you go like this. Yeah, so.
It's from the school. They do it in the school in Slovakia.
Oh, so you mean...
They teach us that in the school.
So then it's more of a Russian thing.
Yeah. No? It's coming from that side.
It's coming from that side. No, because they're Ukrainians, you know, Polish, you know, it's like that. You know, we don't care about all that Russian jazz. You know. Just like, you know, the Russians destroyed farming and everything. But the Poles kept on with their farming, couldn't care less, you know, what the Russians said. Okay, yeah, it's just like the self is not an effect. It means you have a cause and effect. So the soul's not an effect of something. The soul's always been there. So then how would you say that there, if there's the created, there's the creator? So the soul is always there. So then how would you establish God? Does that make sense? So that's why Mud was saying you can't depend upon inference. You know, it's not that you can't use it. Because that's the simplest thing. You say there's a pot, there's a creator of the pot. But then if someone gets real technical about the nature of the soul, so in other words, they would have to understand the eternal nature of the soul. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then, at that point, then you would have to say is that it's not an effect, so therefore you couldn't use cause and effect as your inference. Yeah? So that's why he's saying it's not a strong position.
For the modern scientists, you could use that argument because they don't accept the existence of the soul. They're not going to be able to bring forward some example of something that exists that isn't an effect.
Yeah, it means they wouldn't use these things because they're just, for them, pratyaksha is their only source. So then you have to go by if they could see it. Yeah. You know, so then you'd have to use with them these elements of, you know, in the negative, what's not there, you know, and things like that to deal with, bend around their heads, right? Mm-hmm. Or a crowbar, you know. Okay. If the scriptural texts seem to indicate the identity of God and self or of God and the world, this would be contradicted by perceptual experience and inference, and consequently the monistic interpretations of these texts would be invalid. Yeah, because if they're saying means there you're having the let's say you have what is there in the scripture, but then by perception, then you can see it's different from that. They're saying that the living is illusion, all these different things, but you can see that there's difference between things. So the Mayavad would be, made invalid by these elements. Now the scriptures cannot suggest anything which is directly contradicted by experience. For if experience be invalid, then the experience of the validity of the scriptures will also become invalid. The teaching of this, does that make sense? It means that it has to be able to be experienced. So that's what we were saying before, is that the Shabda has to be able to be perceived, right? So it can't be contradicted by experience. Because then if the experience is invalid, then your experience that the scriptures are correct would also be invalid, because you're perceiving that. Right? So, therefore, they can't be contradictory. The teachings of the scripture gains additional strength by its consonance with what is perceived by other pramans. Since all the pramans point to the reality of diversity, the monistic interpretation of scriptural texts cannot be accepted as true. When any particular experience is contradicted by a number of other pramanas, that experience is thereby rendered invalid. Okay. So since all the different scriptures, all the different ways of interpreting something, perceiving something, shows that there's differences, then the Vedic, the Shankara idea of monism doesn't stand. So when one praman is contradicted by so many others, then it's invalidated. Mm-hmm. So that's the concept of material nature. Belief in the reality of the world and its values is naturally one of the fundamental tenets of theism. The reality of the world can be proved especially by pratyaksha, direct experience, by many scriptural texts. Besides these pramanas, Madhvacharya resorts to a special type of pratyaksha called sakshi, the intuitive perception by the self, based on our sakshin, or the inner sense organ of the embodied self, sarupendriya. The sakshi is the ultimate criterion of all knowledge and its validation. The sakshi is competent enough to test and judge the data of our experience, gathered from sense perception, inference, and shastras. Even the statements of the shastras, which support impersonalistic views of the unreality of this world, or the identity of Jiva and Brahman, have to be brought before the bar of sakshi before they can be accepted without question. Right, because means those statements of the shastras says that are used to support doesn't mean that they support. It just means they're used to, because they're talking about these other elements, how God is not of the material position or things like that. So then the monists will use those to prove that everything is one, right? That there isn't a difference. So he's saying that all of these have to be brought before the ability to perceive that. Right? So he's saying is this inner, the special type of pratyaksha, the intuitive perception by the self. But this was also, I think, in the yoga, was considered the perception of. Yeah, it was in pratyaksha, but it was called yoga something. It meant that higher level of realization is there. So he's talking about the same thing.
Yoga mudra.
No, it wasn't. It was another category. That's one of the categories.
Some yogic perception.
Yeah, some yogic perception, and that was considered the highest. So in other words, those who had that nicely, those are the ones that then would be giving you the directions in the scriptures. So the great sages and that, they had that, therefore their understanding was best. That's why they're their verbal testimony is considered valuable, because they have that kind of realization. Right? So he's just giving a different name here. Remember that?
No, we don't remember. We're just thinking, is that what people call the sixth sense?
Yeah, kind of. It can, but there's also niyamas. This is in Shankya. Oh, here we go. Is that it? What is it? I thought it was Patanjali. But maybe it's not. Maybe it's within Shakya.
I seem to recall something when we went through last time with Svatramaraj, and it may have been in the Nyaya section.
Yeah, that's the... But there's a particular... There was a chart. I remember the chart. The only problem is this. I'm looking for it here, but there is nothing here.
No.
So that means it's on this side. But it was a chart about how... Six systems. This is where it's starting. It's already at Shankar, page 8. What happened to Nyaya and everybody?
It wasn't in the book, yeah. It was some.
Oh, maybe that's why I'm thinking of.
It could be in yoga, the yoga section.
Well, we were looking there, but I didn't see it. It's one of those, if you don't see it immediately, then it's, you know. Because they have a nice list, but everybody had a list.
Yeah.
You know. But it was just explaining the different kinds of the. Oh, that's what all those loose papers were. I remember seeing a whole bunch of loose papers. Leave it. Okay. When texts like Tattvamasi and Neha Nanasti appear to teach the identity of Jiva and Brahman in the unreality of the world, such teaching or interpretation of these texts has to be unhesitatingly rejected as invalid because it goes against the Upajivya Pramana, that Pramana which offers subsistence, which in present case is the tested Sakshi Anubhava of the difference between the individual self and Brahman and of the reality of the world of experience. Yeah, that was what I was trying to find, because it explained it more carefully there. See, because what I think is what it is I'm not sure if they're taking these directly from the Madhvas or taking them from academics on the Madhvas. Because if they're taking it from the academics on the Madhvas, it means if you're taking directly from the Madhvas, the wording that they use is so technically difficult. You know, in other words, if you understand their basis, then how they talk makes sense. But until you caught the basis, because here the key things aren't exactly given, so it's hard to understand the wording. And so now, if you're taking it from the academics, they'll even less understand it. So then it makes sense. So it's like almost there, but not quite, because there's that something, one little key is missing. You know what I'm saying? While the Ramanujas are very, their point is make it available. So they word it in that so that people can understand. While the Madhvas, they don't seem to worry about that so much, because the Elmer said the sattvic souls, they'll figure it out, and everybody else don't worry about it. You know,
so the focus is on making it exact.
Yeah, they're trying to make it exact, but the problem is the things that point out the exactness haven't exactly been given.
Uh-huh. But it's not coming directly from Madhva, it's coming from.
Yes, like that. So whether that's been something there, but even then, Jayatirtha. But he's in the line.
Yeah, but Madhva cared for
him. Yeah, so generally it's more, because, I mean, you could read things that sometimes, and they're very, very clear. Like some of these things they make very clear, but it's somehow another. Yeah. The intuitive perception of the self based on a suction or inner sense organ of the embodied self, srupendriya. Right? So he doesn't go into exactly what that means. One text like Tattvamasi, okay, because I am that, but the point is I can understand I'm not that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm here and that's there. So there is a difference, you know. So that's basically what he's going about.
So So their concept of material nature, that it exists?
Yeah, that it exists, so therefore you can understand that I'm not that. And so they're taking it, what you're perceiving and all that is real. The problem is, it's not your perception of it. The problem is that we're interpreting that for our own purpose. Right? We don't put as much emphasis on that as using it, though we do. Just like we say, believe the argument, the discussions or that, then you take it. Go chant Hare Krishna, try it for some weeks. And if you don't like it, hey, then don't bother. But if it makes a difference, then, come back, inquire, and take it further. So you have that element of that I can, like in Manu, it has your self-satisfaction. You're taking the Veda, you're taking the Shastra and the tradition, you're taking what the Acharyas are saying, and then you're applying that in your life. And when you feel it's working, that's the difficulty that comes up, is that that takes some discrimination, right? Because it's a source of valid knowledge. But then the problem comes is that we try to make it into something by the external, then I can tell. Rather than there's the internal element. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. The last few days, so many of those questions are about that. So then, if he does this, then we consider him a nonsense. No, but what about that? You know what I'm saying? So the point is, no, there's a mood. Mm. So you're taking, if that mood is right, then it's going in the right direction. If the mood is wrong, even if externally looks right.
To distinguish between.
Yeah, so then how can we tell the mood? In other words, it has to be an external thing that I can see with the senses. But they're not using the element of discrimination and that of understanding the subtler aspects. Does this make some sense? Yeah, so that's where the difficulty comes in.
Is it also that sometimes the time factor is not really understood? That the subtle gives a grosser result, but there may be some time before it manifests.
It's just action and reaction, but the point is, it's this time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Yes.
Seems like another difficulty could be that it might turn into really speculative thing.
Yeah, so this is one way to stop it. Because here is that he's a powerful preacher, right? He's Bhima, you just go in, pick a few elephants up, twirl them around, throw them on the other elephants, wash them, like that, have some fun. So it's kind of like, at one point it's just no, but this is, you can't perceive that, you can't that, and this force of it is just, how do you deal with it? So the general mass will accept it, and then the pandit can't do anything about it. So you can see that it also matches that particular style of preaching. Mm. Concept of the soul. Essence of selfhood. From Vishnu Tattva, Vinir Naya. Who is the jiva or the soul, and how is he known? To this question the reply is, the soul is known as I. Whenever anyone utters the word I, it should be understood that he is meaning thereby his jiva, or soul. Further, he is subject to happiness or misery. That is, whenever one becomes happy or miserable, the concerned happiness or misery is experienced by the soul. But it's not experienced by the body. It is the soul who enjoys the happiness and suffers the misery. Moreover, it is the soul who is subjected to the samsara bandhana, and it is the soul who gets released from this bondage and enjoys the bliss of the moksha or final liberation. Because it can't be the body, because the body is not one who's enjoying samsara, because it doesn't go to this body doesn't go to the next body. It's not like this body is there and then it transforms into the next body. It's like that. You go in and, grandma was there and you put her in bed and everything. And, you're a little worried like that. And then you go and you come in the next morning and someone else is there, right? Like that.
Screaming baby.
Yeah, no, it's a big nose, kind of like that. It's got all grandma's clothes on. But, it's
a gray color.
Yeah, a little gray color, like that. And big eyes, all these different things. So it's not like that. It's that the body, so it's the soul who is perceiving. When we say I, we mean the soul. But we'll identify, that means the body. But the point is the body is always changing, it's temporary, so it can't be the body as I. You know, in other words, when we say Atma, I, it's meaning the soul. The other things are always in a state of flux.
The materialist would say that, well, I'm also in a state of flux.
No, because the point is the old man still kind of remembers all the things as a kid and still relates to them all. You know, socially you might have to make some adjustments. but otherwise, it's that same continuity of consciousness. Hmm. So that does not change it. Right, the existence, the consciousness, and that's he's the one who experiences the happiness. The jivas are the reflected counterparts, pratibimba amsa, of Vishnu. The bodies of the jivas, eternally present in Vaikuntha, are transcendental, aprakrita. Hence, they are called unconditioned reflected counterparts, nir upadika pratibimba amsa. The bodies of the jivas of the material world are material. Therefore, they are called conditioned reflected counterparts. Sa upadika pratibimba amsa. That means with upadis and without upadis. The question then arises, what function, like a mirror, upadi, in the bimba pratibimba veda, avada? What functions like a mirror, upadi, in the bimba pratibimba vad? Verily, without a mirror, there cannot be any reflection. If the jiva is a reflection of Brahman, there must be something to act the role of the mirror. What is that upadi? Madhvacharya explains that the sroop, or the inherent nature of the jiva itself, functions as upadi. The state of the soul is in moksha. They are not formless beings or colorless points, but atomic individuals with their own specific forms and characteristics. They have spiritual bodies of their own with appropriate organs, and have names and forms which are beyond the knowledge of those still in bondage.
Why would Upadi be like a mirror? It would be the dust in the mirror.
They're using the mirror in a different way. It's more like the, you know, the, what we were saying before is in Shankya, that the intelligence is reflecting that elephant, that kind of aspect of the mirror. And so here is that it's actually the nature of the jiva, that's what's being reflected. That means one has form there, that's being reflected as form here. You have activities there, that's being reflected here, but it's not that it's the same, it's perverted. So he has his original form, right? So then he's taking it, the jiva, even though he's in the state of moksha, means you could take it as two. One is that they're not formless like that. Because he's taking actual liberation means to be situated in your relationship with God. So from that point, then they have form and everything. But even if you're taking it just the jiva is in Brahman, he's just liberated. But still, inherently by nature, he has his form and everything. Whether he's recognizing it or not is... You know what I'm saying? You know, kids will do funny things. You know, they'll sit there and say, I'm not here, I'm invisible, or, you know, all kinds of things like that. But it's not exactly how it works. Right? You know? Yeah, depending upon how much time is there and the mood the mom's in, that it either can be seen or not seen. Especially if it has something to do with washing the dishes or cleaning your room, then generally you're seen. Right? Okay, so then we'll stop here. Hari Om. Other Om. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Janitai Gaurapani. because I look through the pages, and you look through the pages before you start. So I look through the pages, and I started with the wrong. Oh. So therefore, don't look through the pages.
There was one scientist, he figured out when he was picking up his bag if he was coming or going by seeing if his lunch was there. But he was so absorbed in abstract thinking that he didn't know.
Who was that?
Some scientist who was a professor, I forget who now, or philosopher, maybe even Immanuel Kant or something. He was funny. Sometimes he would put his umbrella to bed and go stand by the corner where he put his umbrella, and he would stand there for some time.
And then he'd figure out.
Wait a minute. Something's wrong. The umbrella's lying on the bed. This is completely gone.
That's an identity.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty absurd.
That's Western philosophy.
Yeah.